right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole? This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. Now live, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. This is your host, Jason M. Caldwell, along with my newest co-host,
Zachary Louie.
So, do you want to be formally introduced as Zach or Zachary? It's all up to you, man.
Generally go towards Zachary.
All right. Well, I will take note of that in the future of the website, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
Oh, pretty good, man. I have to be honest, I've been having to use a lot of those energy techniques that we've been discussing for the past couple of years.
Yeah, you and me both.
I don't know about you, but for some reason after a long work day, I have been crashing hard. Do you want to get a little conspiratorial tonight? Just a little?
Why not? It's more fun that way.
Well, I'm a little psychic. Some people know that.
Yeah, just a bit.
I can't put my finger on it, and I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to just throw out a little prediction that there might be a disturbance in the force. I usually scoff when people say this stuff on Facebook and things like that. But there's been a really weird pattern lately, man. I've been waking up from a sound sleep, like, every night lately. And I've been wired for sound, but during the day, because of this break in my sleep, you know, I'm having a hard time keeping my energy levels up. I'm having to go back to doing some Qigong and other forms of energy work to keep myself alert and awake and going to get through
right.
my day.
Right.
But I'm just going to throw it out there that I don't have any prediction as to what, and other people can argue with me, but I think there's a disturbance in the force, like something's going to happen big here soon.
Well, who knows, man? Who knows? Just keep up on your energy work, right?
Maybe it's that total eclipse of the sun coming up.
Possibly.
So, we got to throw it out there again that the Do Magic Challenge at DoMagicWithAK.com is underway again. So, you folks ought to go check that out. Participation is always free. Zach, you've been involved in...
Just really about all of them. Challenges.
So, really, I got Stephanie's take last week. I want you to tell people what you'd like to say about the Do Magic Challenges at DoMagicWithAK.com.
I'd say do the magic with a K and get on there, because that's the best way you can get through things. I mean, I've been part of it since it started, on its inception, and literally my magic, energy work, meditation skills, they've increasingly got better just because of this challenge. It really, you could read all the theory in the world you want, but it comes down to, you gotta put rubber to road, and that's where the magical authority kicks in, where you're actually being kept accountable by a group of people, not just yourself. So, in that, you got supports, you can ask people questions, and, well, you have a journal for yourself, and those journals are vitally important, I find, when you're reflecting.
So, we were going to talk about some of your expertise tonight, sir, because coming up this coming weekend, don't you have a webinar that you're doing?
I am. I got a free webinar on Reiki and more on its historical contexts, but as well as its applications, because most people think Reiki is this feel-good type of energy work, but when we look at Eastern energy work, it comes down to it needs to get results. So that's where I want to put some teeth back into it, and I'm going to start with this webinar.
You know, it's funny that you would say feel-good, because I don't think any serious Reiki practitioner is going to say that it's a feel-good experience when they're working on other people.
Mm-hmm.
An aspect that I don't think a lot of people get into, especially in the more New Age community, is you get a lot of really dark impressions off of people sometimes if they have a lot of problems.
Right.
What would you like to say about, as a regular practitioner, okay, let's not get you into legal trouble. What exactly... I know that Canadian law, we've discussed this. I cannot call you a doctor of Chinese medicine. What can I call you?
Legally? You can call me a registered acupuncturist.
A registered acupuncturist.
Yes.
And someone who has a lot of knowledge on Eastern-based metaphysical medicines. How's that sound?
Sure.
Hands-on knowledge. Why don't you give the listeners somewhat of a rundown of what you might go through working on a typical client? Like, what is the exchange that goes on? What are some of the things that go on in your head that aren't all light, love, and nice?
Well, I mean, if we're just going focus on Reiki, I mean, I've worked with clients and they've had detachments on them, and there's points where you have to actually kick some ass, and that's not nice or fun for anyone. So, I mean, that's one side. Then you got these traumas people have or emotional shadow aspects that people have. I mean, it gets pretty dicey sometimes.
Well, and don't you somewhat sometimes feel almost like an empathetic connection where, you know, that shadow side starts kind of working on your psyche and you have to separate the two?
Yeah, and I mean, this is where it's like, in Reiki, you have to be receptive to what the other person's feeling, because from at least a Buddhist standard, the person is not separate from you. But at the same time, it's a one-way energy interaction. So it's kind of weird in that regard.
Right. The energy is one way from you to them, not necessarily the information. The information becomes an exchange.
Exactly. And information, at that point, you got to separate, well, what is information? What is energy? And you literally have to be almost sterile in some ways. But at the same time, you can't fully disconnect from the other person because, well, those points that they're working on are points that you need to work on from a Buddhist context, because, again, no separation.
Let me also say that I'm probably making that sound a little darker than I should. It's the whole idea that these impressions are very important, because this guides you as a practitioner on where to focus and what to do for this person.
Mm-hmm.
So that exchange could be forcibly blockaded. We don't tend, when we do that kind of work, to try to forcibly blockade that exchange. We want that information. We want to know where to focus the energies based on the information we're receiving from the person that we're working on.
Right, and I would say it's almost like, I don't want to say it's a filter, but it's closer to a filtering type of thing where it's like, okay, this is information I can use, this is information I can't use, or it's not relevant right now.
Right.
So that's where I would say when it comes to energy work particularly, I mean, Reiki, it's very hands-on with that. Qigong, it's more like you're cultivating yourself. But you'll have similar experiences on the Qigong level when you get to certain levels. Like, hell, I was even doing a Zen meditation earlier today, and I was crying just because I was working through different things. And that's just a pure Zen meditation.
Well, and this is where, how do I put this? We tend to get haughty sometimes and think that, oh, well, you know, I'm better than this. Well, we all have things that we repress,
mm-hmm,
ourselves even. And, you know, sometimes we're quite aware of what those things are, and we choose to ignore them, and they come to the surface, and we have to face them.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, really, I think we can take ourselves by surprise. Like, you'll get imagery, I didn't know that was bothering me. I didn't know that was an issue, but now I know, and I have to do something about it.
Well, right, and specifically with Zen meditations, which I'm going to probably do for the next challenge, actually, like Beginner's Mind, it's you have to literally just be with your thoughts, which is a task I'm fairly good with, but then it comes down to the question of what's the narrative of points that are hindering you? Because that's not you in the present moment, that's you in the past, and those thoughts keep arising. So you could forcefully shut it down and focus, and that's one way of doing the meditation. The other way is actually just letting them pop and percolate themselves off and seeing it for what it is and just accepting it, as painful as that be.
That makes sense. Do you have any advice for how people can just accept?
I would literally say just go through the process. I mean, you could talk all the theory you want about going on the treadmill for this, but when it comes down to the acceptance point, it's, if I were to say transform it from a Qigong perspective, I'd say, well, you can love that aspect of you, you could throw compassionate energy toward it, all these things. However, from a Zen standard, it's really just, this is what it is, and I'm okay with that. And that story or narrative falls away because that's not being present anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that is probably, you know, as you brought up, these past traumas can affect people. There is something to be said about not living in the past when he said mm-hmm. just accept. I would throw in my two cents and say, you know, you may have had that traumatic event 20 years ago that you think is indicative of you now. It's only indicative of you now as much as you let that formulate how you treat people and how you let those memories cultivate into your day-to-day life now. The past is not your present. The present is always moving forward.
Exactly. And in that regard, you have an infinite amount of possibilities from there. But if you're stuck on the past and you're stuck on certain points of your identity, well, at that point, you aren't moving forward anymore, or you don't have that flexibility.
Sometimes I get a little spooked because the person I was 20 years ago is not the person I am now. Sometimes in my meditative time, I don't even view them as being the same person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how better to explain that. I know that sounds kind of spooky in a sense, but really I'm not the 40-guzzling, gang-banging, gangsta child I was in the 90s. And people laugh and they go, oh man, he's making this stuff up. Well, no, I'm not. I was in a gang, okay, I was, really. I've matured. I've grown up since then.
Right. I mean, you still got parts of you that are, like, funny and have those attitudes, but there's a time and place for everything, but doesn't mean you're stuck to that pattern.
Well, of course not. I guess as the old saying goes, you can take the boy out of the ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of the boy. I probably have my moments when I fly off the handle, you know? One of my besetting issues is I will always have an extremely defensive side of my nature that when I sense danger, I go into fight mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something my close friends like Zachary and Andrea and people that I've worked with for years now. I think Andrea more than any of you, just because we've been in some more hostile situations as brothers together. Where we did not feel safe, maybe out in the street or whatever. I think Andrea has seen a bit more of my hostile side than you have over the years. Because when I feel safe, when I'm with my friends, I'm in a safe environment, that's not me indicative of who I am. Mm-hmm. That's very indicative of who I am in the fight response.
Exactly.
But... You know, now I know that this past week you were talking to some of your clients, some of your students, and you were asking for things that they wanted you to cover tonight. Now, were there any particular questions that you wanted to bring up on the air?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just did a Facebook open channel hive mind saying, like, hey, anyone have any questions? And Snyder posted up a question, so this is on the air. And he was basically asking more along the lines of, well, he's doing some basic energy work, and he has it, he could feel it at times, and then he'll let it flow, but how does he actually fully utilize actually working with energy work? He's used it for sigils and luck and things like that, which is all good, but I think this is going to be a good discussion between both of us, because, I mean, from my perspective, I would look at this and saying, well, if you're actually cultivating energy, it's like battery storages. So to fully utilize it, that's actually when it comes into for health reasons or magical reasons. So the more energy work you do, you'll find naturally, you'll find things pop up, or you have the amplitude, as Andrea would say, to actually go through it and get what you need from a results perspective.
Very much so. Well, now, what kind of energy work has he been dealing with? Mostly Qigong?
I'm guessing Qigong. He didn't say it specifically, so...
You know, it's interesting. I guess I don't want to have to go into a full lesson on how to cast a sigil. I don't know what his background is, or I'd first say recommend definitely picking up a book on like hands-on chaos magic, of course.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Something that would show you how to channel your creative energies into something such as a sigil. Here's the thing. Magic versus self-work, when I say magic, I guess what some people would consider low magic or magic to get results in the physical world, where some people would call high magic elevation of the self.
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of low magic, you need to channel your energies outward in some medium. Now, something I was taught early on in my magical training from a actual witch that I was working with was the concept of, and oddly enough, this is probably a more advanced technique for some people. We were actually visualizing situations we needed resolved while building up intense amounts of personal energy, focusing on the result that we needed to get, and then focusing on blasting that energy out toward that target.
Right. So, I mean, when you say something like that, there are Qigong forms where I'll go through something like the 8-step brocade, and there are those techniques literally in there that once people get to a certain basic energetic structure, I'll start teaching them this.
That makes sense. You know, it's actually funny. I don't remember. I'm not really hiding information here. I really just don't remember the title of the book right now. But there was a Qigong book that has kind of circulated between some of us that the author did get into that idea. That's something very similar to that, and it was something that he was focused on, as you said. Once someone learned how to cycle the energy, channel the energy, really get a handle on their personal energy, then they were working on sending that energy out to resolve particular target situations.
Right, because at least one form, at least if we'll say Chinese magic or energy work, would be, well, you need to build up the proper infrastructure within yourself. That's the meridians, the dantians, whatever system you want to use, even chakras possibly, if it's coming from a Chinese Buddhist context. Mm-hmm. But whichever energy system it comes, it's like, you got to work on your internal blocks first. I mean, you could argue that they're metaphors, but at the end of the day, if you're trying to do projective magic and you don't have any juice to you, or you keep getting stuck on, like if we say the energy is like the highway and then there's a traffic jam, doesn't matter what your intention is, it's not going to get through, generally speaking. At least from a Chinese perspective. So that's why they would say do the inner work first, then outer work. To get the results, mind you, there's schools in Chinese culture that go totally against that too. So it just depends. It's like high magic, low magic idea.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. What did your the client bring up other than he brought up sigils? What else did he bring up?
He brought up flow and luck, which at that point I'm like, that could go into sigils, right? That also just could be being in the state of whatever. You could say it's state of luck, state of happiness. And, I mean, you do have those elements even from correspondence charts in China. So, I mean, if we're going to talk about, like, say, luck or money, well, that's metal elements. So you're going to be working on your lungs more.
Okay, yes. Now, okay, you bring up the Chinese correspondence there. So, luck, you say you associate with metal.
Mm-hmm.
The element of metal you associate talismanically in the body with the lungs.
Yes.
Now, what kind of work would you do on the lungs to... And I'm going to throw my two cents in after you give this more refined, because I think your answer is much more refined than mine.
Sure. So, I mean, I would say talismanically, the lungs, any qigong work, any respiration work you would do would fit into actually supporting the lungs themselves. So, it's fairly simple on that. Now, the meridians being like the lung channel or that large intestine channel, or the correspondences to animals such as the tiger, or even directions, which would be the western direction, which could also mean death on some levels, but it could also mean underworld riches. It just depends how you want to work the metaphors, because almost every element can be redefined in Chinese culture, fortunately or unfortunately. So you actually got to know the ins and outs, because it's multiple stack systems.
Okay. Now, my answer is not so refined and technical. My answer is more of, you learn how to feel your emotions, understand your emotions,
mm-hmm.
act with your emotions first. Once you get to a point meditatively that you're able to accept and sit there with an emotion, I don't care how negative it is, you know, if you're angry, if you're ticked off, I'm keeping this nice for the radio, be that, be ticked off, sit there, experience it, don't punch the wall, kick the dog, run out and go drink a beer or whatever. Just sit there and be angry. And start to understand, how's your breathing? Take mental note of that. How are the tactile feelings in your skin with your raised blood pressure? How does that all feel? Take note of it. Seriously. Even though it's hard to mentally focus when you're experiencing such an intense emotion, you start to take note of these things. Now, later on, when you're not in this moment, you can recall this moment. You can start to imagine how it felt, how your skin and your tensing muscles felt, how your breathing started to change, and you can replicate that breath. Actually, you could do a lot just by replicating breathing patterns of certain emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But your energy will start to shift back to that, and you can do that in a controlled environment. Now, let's say with a more positive emotion, like times when you felt like the world was going totally your way, that we'll call that your luck emotion, the kind of emotions you were feeling when things were just going easy. You can recall that, sit and meditate in it for a while, bring it back, and start to imagine, okay, this is how I feel when things are going my way. This is my luck mindset. And start to cycle energy through you, pulling it from your environment, maybe increasing your breath, and imagining that energy of luck increasing. Make it more and more, make it replicate itself, make it multiply itself, intensify it, and then hang on to it. Imagine yourself being complete, your aura being completely filled with that energy. And then relax, slow down your breathing, and try to just get your energy, while keeping the mental focus that you're holding on to that energy, get your mindset back to ground zero and go on about your day. And I would call that a simple way of creating a talismanic body effect. I don't know. Do you have a better explanation for what that would be?
No, I mean, you nailed it right on the point there. That is pretty much, as you say, talismanic body effect. I mean, the main thing I think as a discrepancy here, not from what you said, but just in the posting in question, was more along the lines of, well, I feel like I'm underutilizing the energy. And at that point, I would raise the question of, well, why do you feel you've underutilized energy? Because from a Qigong perspective or any energy work perspective, is there's no lack of energy. It's more just you're not connecting to it at that point.
Okay, so what would be your advice for him to better connect?
Well, exactly like the example that you use, that technique would work right on the bat for that. Because, and then this goes into other questions like, well, what are the fears? What are shadow issues that are popping up? And, you know, if you're doing Qigong, you would say, well, I'm physically tight here. That's a physical gauge. How tight are your muscles? How relaxed are you? And as you go through this body effect of doing the stretching and breathing patterns, you start to open up the tendons, the muscles, the fascia, and all those things, but then you're putting your intention through the body and channels. So at that point, everything you utilize plus the Qigong form, yeah, now we're starting to get into the fun stuff. So yeah, I mean, if I were to actually just detail it, say, all right, Snyder, just, or Cinder, focus on what's the blocks there, or why you feel you're underutilizing the energy. Actually map it out, drop it down, saying, I feel X, this is Y, this is what I want. What's the discrepancy between both? Work toward what you want. You'll find blocks keep popping up toward what you want, and you just address them at the time. And treat it like a ritual. Like I tell all my Qigong clients, hey, you're coming to class, you start the warm-ups, you end with the closing. Because you don't want to walk out of a Qigong class thinking, oh, well, I'm not going to do a sealer and a closing, when that was a full-body ritual you just did.
You know, it's interesting. There's been examples, say, in ceremonial magic, and I can attest to this, but I think some warnings I've heard other ceremonial magicians give is this concept of you go into a ritual and say you're evoking a spirit. And as you're evoking that spirit, there's that energy exchange. So that spirit, whether it be positively aligned, negatively aligned, according to whatever metaphor you're using, whatever system you're using, that affects your energy. And at the end of a ritual where you're interacting with the spirit of a certain mindset, which is going to in turn affect your energy and affect your mindset, there is, at the end, usually a license to depart, and a closing banishing to clear out your personal energy. Now, say for example, let's take a more neutral spirit. Like I've heard the example once of someone who did a Dionysus ritual, and then did not do a license to depart, did not do a banishing, and then just went out in the public and started to see like the influences of Dionysian energy on the environment, on other people, even someone, you know, you go out to the bar and you're there with someone who, you know, of course they're at the bar, that's not like they don't go to the bar, but they tend to be the person that only has a drink or two and then they leave. Now this Dionysian energy comes upon them, and they've thrown down six beers and they don't even know why.
Now that's a good party there.
Things like that can happen. There is something to be said about, and you could draw that parallel, like say if someone were doing like a lot of Qigong and did not do a proper closing, what would be the effects if they just went out into the world without closing down and doing a proper closing?
Well, what I generally tell people is think of your energy like a bank account. You can do Qigong, you've just maybe, say you did Qigong for an hour. You've invested $100 into that account. If you don't do your closing and sealing, guess what? All that energy that you just put into that hour, you may enjoy for the next 3, 4, or 5 hours, but it's gone the next day. And that's actually the first thing I tell every single person that comes to me for Qigong, where I'm saying, okay, I don't really care if you learn the forms right now, the first 5 classes, I'm going to keep hammering you how to seal and close. Because the, at least from a Taoist perspective, it's about the retention of energy. So if you're not doing that, unless you're doing hours and hours of Qigong, which, let's be honest, no one really has time for, unless you're like a monk or you're heavily committed, you want to make the most out of the time you're using. So this is where I'd say you need to store that energy in the Lower Dan Tien, and from there, it starts building up as a bank account would. So you put $100 in, you sealed it, you've deposited it in the account. Next day, you do some Qigong again. Great, you put another $100 in. Eventually, it starts having an exponential effect because money begets money, or energy begets energy. So it starts to almost give you more energy exponentially at a certain point in your practice. And then when life continues onward, you know, traumas happen, stuff sucks, and you get tired and your energy reserves get tapped. So when people face ailments or things like that, why do they feel or do they look like they've aged overnight when something really traumatic happens? It's because they're taking out their actual DNA reserves, but not their Qi bank account. So in Qigong, for the longevity purposes, you're building a bank account, so if something does happen, which is going to happen at some point, your bank account gets hit, but your DNA does not get hit. So then you may have, say, 10,000 in the account, and you lose 6,000. You still got 4,000, but you're not hitting negatives. And then you can start building it up again. So that's the importance of particularly sealing. And then never mind the effects of, well, if I'm losing the energy, I go back to normal, whatever normal baseline was for you, because you're not building from normal at that point if you're losing it. But I would say further, what happens when you go out and you're talking to your friends or you're out shopping? At that point, you're confusing the subconscious mind because it still thinks you're in Qigong mode. So emotions may pop up. Fears that haven't been processed may pop up. All these things pop up, and you wonder why, oh, my energy is going so up and down. It's because you've said you're in energy mode right now. So any influences external of you can influence you directly because you haven't sealed it yet. So it has a dual effect.
You know, that makes sense because when you're focusing on Qigong, you're focusing on pulling and cycling, how can I put this? It's the pure energy in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Your focus keeps you from, say, doing something that'd be more akin to psychic vampirism and just taking whatever energy is there that's impure.
Right.
Unfiltered. Where this is subconsciously applying a filter so that you're pulling the purest of environmental energy, but not pulling the gunk with it.
Exactly.
So if you keep your aura open and you go out into the world, but you're no longer focused on just pulling that pure energy, yes, you're going to become somewhat of a vacuum that starts sucking up whatever's in the environment in the immediate surroundings.
Right.
So yes, you bring up a very good point.
And I would say further, you know, when you're going down this type of train of thought, if you're being that vacuum, then you can't separate the energy out from what you are versus what the actual energy is around you. And that becomes a big problem. I mean, I've seen people that do Reiki, and we may get some hate mail on this one, but whatever.
Controversial Reiki. It can't be more controversial than my death Reiki, but go on.
Well, yeah, it's not that bad. But, I mean, I met this one Reiki practitioner, and literally she's like, I could give everyone a Reiki pass for a day. Which I'm like, what? And then she was getting people to do the Reiki pass that she passed on to people, but they were actually doing Qigong. And really crappy Qigong, because it didn't cleanse. So you're getting that debris of whatever their good intentioned energy going through you, but they're vamping themselves to you. And it's all muddied up energy. And I'm just like, yeah, this is gross. Energetic. But then, you know, I know how to do all this type of stuff, because, you know, we're part of Quantum Life Institute. But with that, you know, what happens if you didn't know how to shield, or you didn't know how to have that energy sense? Well, at that point, that person's pouring their negative energy into you, and then what's the reaction the other person's going to have? They're going to have a negative energy reaction, and it becomes a double filter now, and a loop.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to point fingers. It comes down to there are a couple different types of people that can get you in a bad situation in a scenario like that.
Mm-hmm. Now,
more diabolical-minded people could pass things through intentionally, but I think what you're referring to is a case where they weren't being diabolical. This wasn't somebody trying to set out to hurt other people.
Nope.
I'm getting the impression that they were just that naive.
Yeah, they really were just that naive. But I mean, that's what it's like. It's nice, because I would view this and I'm like, well, Reiki, you need attunements for it. That's a fact. But from a Qigong perspective, I'm like, you didn't do any of the Qigong steps. And having that Qigong background was nice being able to compare both, because I'm like, okay, they're trying to do Qigong techniques, but they're really doing bad at this. But they're thinking it's Reiki.
Reiki is a very touchy subject.
yes it is.
Because I too have seen proposed Reiki practitioners that were doing, as you would say, crappy Qigong. Yeah, I think there's probably no argument that proper Reiki has to come from a proper line.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost. But I think one could get results. Oh boy, I'm gonna get some hate mail too. You probably could learn to connect to the Reiki current without going through another line, someone else's line. That's just my two cents. But you would have to do a lot of self-work first, a lot of energy work. You'd have to be able to discern reaching up to that current that a ceremonial magician would call something like Keter. Getting as close to Godhead as you possibly can and tapping the live wire of that sphere to get those kinds of results. I think anything less than that, and I know I just gave a really simplified explanation, but that's a lot of work to get to that point.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work. I mean, if we even look at Sui Sensei's background, I mean, the dude was a Tendai Buddhist monk. He had Shinto practices, and he did Shugendo, which is like a mix of Taoist, Buddhist, and Shinto practices, and martial arts, before he even got into Reiki. So, in that regard, and to even get in touch with Reiki, he had to do a Buddhist meditation and fast for like 30 days, or whatever odd amount of number it was, and do a specific practice, to the point where it's like, stated that Zen Monk said, well, if you want to get enlightened, you have to die. And, well, he kind of metaphorically died when he got Reiki.
Okay, so here's, you're getting into a tough topic. How would you explain metaphorical death?
How do I explain more metaphorical death? That is a tough topic, right? I mean, this gets into the point of, well, can you let go of yourself? Whatever you think you are.
You're talking about another hard topic that people in more Western practices might call ego death.
Correct.
So, not actually, you know, physically dying on the table and getting hit with the paddles and brought back, but the whole idea of letting your ego, your sense of self, all these what a lot of people would call negative connotations of self, letting all of that, pushing all of that aside, disconnecting from it.
Right, because if you're coming from a Buddhist current, we'll say, it is all about ego death in some ways. Even though Tendai or Tantai Buddhism is about the appreciation of life, you have to let go of your crap first before you can enjoy it.
So, Kat in the chat room asked an interesting question of, does Reiki have a specific current?
Well, I mean, I would almost agree with you to a point that it's closer to a Kether from a ceremonial magician standard. I mean, Reiki feels different than Qigong. It feels different from prana work. I would say, if I had to reference it in a Qigong context, yeah, it feels more heavenly on the energies there.
Yes, definitely. That is something, a good explanation of what would set it apart from just the raw light, even the raw live wire of what we would call, say, life energy or chi.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. And then, I would go as far as to say that the more I learn, the more I know that I have to learn. If I personally was going to be 100% honest, I'd say I think I know the flavor until a new life experience shows me that I don't. I might one day tap a live wire that's more that than what I thought that was. I have had experiences like that before in my past, so we will see.
Well, it's a work in progress, man. But always a work in progress.
Oh, yes, but to see the results you want to see with that kind of work, you have to reach as high as you possibly can. And by all means, if you ever find a path that's higher, go for that path, but go as high as you know high can be.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why you got the different levels of Reiki. I mean, you got your level 1, you got your level 2, and level 3. They're all different.
And well, and then you even find different ways to, you know, attune that to the work that you're doing. Hence why you filter it through different symbols and things of that nature.
Right. And I mean, that's where the stress has come in. It's like, at least, you know, in the webinar and what I'd be trying to do with Reiki practices for people, it's just kind of like, okay, understand where Sui came from. I mean, most people did know that he actually did martial arts. And it was a specific type of martial art, too. So at that point, there's a certain vibe to that, because it's a samurai-based martial art. And then, you know, never mind the Buddhist practices or those Shinto practices, because the Shinto emphasis is more on, like, your heart connection. The Buddhist practice is more, in some ways, at least the Japanese one, is more on earth energies. And then there's still those Taoist influences, too. So, Reiki as a full, complete system, it's a huge system to explore.
You know, it's I'm glad you brought that up, that that was a very Japanese system he was going through, because I found a ways back, I was trying to do some research on Usui. People are putting out some pretty messed up false false biographies out there on the net.
Well, yeah. I mean, I read a few things, like, you know, Chakra Model. I absolutely love the Chakra Model, and there is some of the Chakra Model in Tentai Buddhism, but he was primarily coming from a Three Dan Tien level perspective, because that's the fundamental cultural view in Japan. So that Sanmitsu, or Three Dan Tien, it's like, okay, you have three Reiki symbols now. Right? To start off, and then you got the Masters at the very end. But at that point, that's your Trinity, Heaven, Man, and Earth. So this is a difference of, well, there's traditional methods, which, you know, me being academic, I love the traditional methods, but then there's the non-traditional methods, and where do they all have their applications for results? Because I was looking through those traditional texts, and I'm like, I'm looking at some of the stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that's distinctly from Chinese medical massage, some of the techniques, where it'd be like, what they would call like half-body blood cleansing or something like that. You just pass your hand over somebody's spine. And I'm like, that is a Chinese medical technique that you would do there. But then he has other ones where it's like the namaste or the gosho hand prayer position and how you would root the visualization back to the lower dantian and then into the palms and work through the emotions and things like that.
Okay, for those listening who don't know, explain the lower dantian.
So lower dantian is basically your base energy field. It's from a Chinese perspective or Far Eastern perspective, it's correlated with earth energies. So literally that's your bottom of the pyramid. So essentially everything grows from this point. It's your physical vitality. Then you get to that heart center, and that's your middle dantian, that's emotions. Upper dantian is your psychic power or psyche and more of those types of abilities that will connect you to heaven.
So you have done a lot of work with the three dantians. I know you've also done a great deal of work with chakras in other contexts. Are there any parallels that you draw, Zach, between... I'm sorry, I know you prefer Zachary. I'm going to keep calling you.
It's all right. It's all right, Jason.
But what kind of parallels would you draw between working with the Dantians versus working with chakras? And expounding on that, are there any pointed differences that you found in your personal experience?
Okay, this gets into a long, long discussion. But, I mean, in short summary, I would say chakras, we'll say the not traditional seven, because we know the seven chakras are like from the 1920s from some British dude, and that's actually not really Indian. But it still works as a good metaphor.
It's a great metaphor, but okay, maybe I should poke you there. Yes, the seven common chakras come from this British guy. Okay, yeah. So,
but assuming we're even using that, like that's fine. I would generally go from a perspective of, well, at least from Taoist perspective, the seven chakras would be correlated to the microcosmic orbit and the year cycle. So remember, in Taoist cosmology, when they're working in the body, there was an influence of Buddhism and Indic thought, so the Taoists had to work with it. So there's certain juncture points when you're doing the microcosmic orbit that would go up the spine or in front of the chest. And that's actually where the correlation places are with all the nerve endings or major nerve endings and I guess say colonies of nerves. But that's also generally where the chakras are too. So that's the interesting point, I would say, on a Taoist perspective. Now, the Dantians, at least my experience has been with chakras, is Dantian, you can collect the energy, and it's like literally a field of energy that you would cultivate. So you really just be like, I'm going to put cabbage in this field. I'm going to till it. And what you would do with the chakras now is, I would say, imagine you have a cereal factory on that farm. So that's what the chakras do. They refine it into a certain type of cereal or certain types of metaphors you would use from the field. So you have baseline energy in the Dantian. So
the Dantian, I'm going to well up the raw energy.
Yes.
With the chakra, I'm going to fortify myself with riboflavin.
Right. And then, like, you know, if we were to put this in a meridian context now that's connected, it's like the meridians are the channels that go up to the limb. So I view those like roads. So let's just say your meridians are like the road and all those little acupuncture points are kind of like, we'll say, Walmarts or little grocery stores that deliver everything from either the chakras or the Dantians themselves with that specific packaging or metaphor.
I like that metaphor. That's an interesting way of putting it, how it's more refined.
So that's where I would say, at least from a typical Chinese standard, the Dantian would be, this is baseline energy, then I'd send it down to the stores, and each road has a certain metaphor for it. So, for example, lungs is about boundaries, inspiration, things like that. And then with each acupuncture point, you get further refinement or a further narrative. Now, if you had the chakras do that, it says, well, okay, say you have baseline root issues. So that's like, you know, survival issues or things like that. Well, I could build up my lower Dantian, and I generally find on a physical level, the Dantian pretty much has three chakras in it. If you actually look at the positioning of where the Dantians are placed versus where the actual chakras are, generally it's about three of them. Sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less, but physically it's about three. So then you can kind of work on those metaphors with the chakras to have a abundance of energy and then, say, further refine it, and then I want to push a narrative a certain way for the meridians. And that's what you see in Chinese Buddhism, like specifically around, say, Shaolin Kung Fu.
Explain to me how this works in Shaolin Kung Fu, because that's something you have experience in that I have not experienced, and
so
how does it translate into this martial art?
Sure. So you have to understand that Shaolin Kung Fu is basically movement forms of Hatha Yoga, except used in a martial context. And there is relations to the Indian martial art, which I'm not going to be able to pronounce on here without butchering it, but there's an Indian martial art that's like the parent system to all martial arts, they generally say. So there's that relation between the two. And with Buddhism, that's what it brought in. It's the chakra system. Because it had that Indian influence. So when you're doing the Hatha Yoga stretches in Shaolin martial arts, you are doing a few different things. One, you're working the meridians, because they had to work with that system from a Taoist perspective. You're in China. But when you get to the higher up levels in Shaolin Kung Fu, you start working on, well, void meditations where you become nothing, or you start doing more what they call the Trivedda route, which is personal empowerment, which is actually working on your chakras to follow a similar view of what the Indians used to do with yoga.
So, how does it translate when you're actually striking with a kick or a punch? Is there an application to the energy work and what you're doing when you're delivering an offensive strike?
Yes. So this gets into things like DMAC, where, for people that don't know, DMAC is where you energetically shut down a point so you can collapse a whole physical area. Because remember, at least from the Eastern context, physical and energetic aren't different. So it just depends which way you want to hit. Do you want to hit the energetic way or you want to hit the physical way? Either way, you're both going to get influence, or they'll mutually go into each other. So if you want to hit someone from a fear perspective, yeah, there's physical kicks, there's eye projections, there's all this type of stuff you could do from a martial arts standard to just hit that level with people.
Well, have you been able to apply that in a fight or a sparring where, okay, there was a distinct difference between hitting the target physically versus properly hitting the target energetically?
I have a little experience on that in terms of application for a martial arts standard. And yeah, there is a difference where you would hit, like, I remember I hit a friend on that because they're like, well, this ain't gonna work. And I'm like, okay, I tested it, and then they got dizzy right away because I projected the energy down. But then I hit them back up and they were fine.
See, once again, my personal experience with any kind of energy in martial arts was much less refined, where I call it the effortless strike, where you go to strike someone while sparring, so it's, say, controlled contact, and you did not physically hit them that freaking hard. You hit them physically with control, but you got a much greater response with impact than what was expected, because the energy was so focused.
Right, and that is actually a technique when you get into the higher levels of martial arts, where it's like, it feels like a tap, but then they're completely, like, blown away.
It gets very interesting that, you know, and I'm going to put you to task. If you know any martial artists that focus on that kind of thing, please, please feel free to invite them on the show, because I would like to discuss that particular topic more. Simply because I've had experiences and I know that it legitimately can happen. And something I've seen a lot on some random YouTube videos recently is, oh, well, all the martial artists and practitioners that are into this energy method, it's all bogus. And they probably get the worst examples they could possibly find to prove that point.
Well, right. I mean, this is where I'll probably have to go hunting. There's a few people I have in mind that actually I know can do demonstrated abilities on that, and they actually, like, sell stuff. So I'll see if I can get them on, because, I mean, we got a few people getting lined up for the next type of hosts or interviews.
Well, I like the fact that we've been able to bring more variety to the show, and I'm looking to keep expounding upon that. We're going to be wrapping up here shortly. I want to remind everyone that Pagan Pride Day Cleveland's coming up soon. You're going to hear me typing because I'm going to do a quick search. Because I don't remember the exact date. It's coming up here in August.
Isn't that the 24th weekend, dude?
It's the weekend of the 24th. It is more specifically, it's August 26th, 27th, Bedford Heights, Bedford, Ohio. But look that up at Google Cleveland Area Pagan Pride and you'll get all that info. I'm going to remind everyone that, and I'll have more on that next week too to remind everyone, want to let everyone know that the gathering is coming up after us. There are a couple great ladies. I like to listen to them while I'm editing the podcast. You should.